Good morning. Good morning. Happy Monday morning. Hope you're having a great day. I know I am, so I hope you are as well. The program's going to be very interesting today and tomorrow. Did anybody notice what's going on with the trial of Brian Walsh, who spells his name wrong, quite frankly? I don't know why there's an E on the end of his name. Hopefully that won't impact the jury in his favor or against him. But Brian Walsh, who is being charged with murder of his wife, Anna, really interesting case, really interesting case. We're going to talk about it tomorrow with a defense attorney who used to be a prosecutor. Today he's a state representative, Christopher Markey from Dartmouth, and he represents New Bedford as well. Chris will be joining us. Remember, we used Chris as sort of an expert during the Karen Reed trial, both of them, and he's up in Boston being a legislator today. But Chris, of course, spent a long time as a prosecutor in the district attorney's office of Bristol County. And he's a defense attorney today. So I thought he'd be interesting to have him in tomorrow. Talk about the Brian Walsh case. That's the case where he's on trial for murder. But at the last minute, he changed his plea from not guilty to guilty of disposing the body improperly and of lying to the police about his knowledge of her death. It's a really interesting case. It has caught the national attention. Now, obviously, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. And so at this moment, Brian Walsh, as he starts his trial, is obviously innocent. But some of the things I've gleaned from the news coverage, one of the theories is that she died and then he chopped her up. They're pretty sure of that. And I guess he's pled guilty to it now. We'll talk more about it tomorrow with Chris Markey, Representative Chris Markey, who's also a lawyer, former prosecutor. He did murder cases, so I think he'll be particularly insightful here. So the theory of the case is that Brian Walsh, somehow his wife died, and he chopped the body up and put it in all these different dumpsters. And dumpsters get picked up and taken away where they're going, right? Landfills, even incinerators. My understanding from the news coverage is that one of the theories is that Anna Walsh ended up right here in Seamass at the incinerator in the Rochester-Wareham area known as Seamass. I think it was Seamass when we were doing business with them anyway. And that's where her body, at least parts of her body, went. So in that respect, I guess it's a local case. I mean, he's out of Cohasset. And I noticed that it was being covered by the Boston and the Providence media this morning. But also, it was on Fox News, the national morning show. They were talking about it this morning. So it's captured the nation's attention, certainly. The death of Anna Walsh. So we'll talk more about that tomorrow. Guys, the other thing I want you to focus on is the great work being done by the New Bedford Police. The New Bedford Police Union is asking for your support while they negotiate for a fair contract, for better education and training programs for their officers, which is really for the public, let's be honest. New police equipment and technology, and for safe police staffing levels. Very important. The amount of police on the street is about safety, right? For us and for the members of the police union. They can't do this alone. Please support public safety and your brave New Bedford police officers while they keep the great city of New Bedford safe. For more information, please visit the New Bedford Police Union Facebook page or go to the website newbedfordpoliceunion.org. This message is brought to you by the New Bedford Police Union. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Tim White, investigative reporter from Channel 12, to talk about his new special on the last head of the mafia, the last Don of Providence, Luigi Menacchio. Really interesting program. I've watched the first and second episode. The second one dropped this morning on WPRI. The third of four installments will be next Monday. And I understand that's going to have some of our, well, not your friends, my friends, some of your friends, and neighbors in that program. So stick around. We'll be right back. We're expected Tim White on the VIP line coming up after this commercial break. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
I think I'll slip on down to the Oasis, so I've got a friend in low places.
Welcome back. It's Monday morning. I'm Chris McCarthy. You're the audience. We're now joined by Tim White. Tim from WPRI's longtime investigative reporter down there doing a lot on organized crime. And, of course, he wrote the really powerful book, The Last Good Heist. I recommend it to everybody. Make it a good stuffing stocker this year. We're now joined by Tim. Well, we were joined by Tim White. Let me see here. Good morning.
Morning.
Tim.
Yeah. Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. You just temporarily dropped off. I think that's what happened. So we're joined by Tim White. Now, Tim, I watched the second episode of The Last Don of Providence or Rhode Island on this morning on WPRI. I downloaded the app to my television. Really powerful app. Really powerful app and really powerful episode. Talk about it, Tim.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Last Don of Providence now, episode two, as you said, has come out. It will be a four-part documentary series looking into Luigi Baby Shacks Menacchio, the former mob boss of a little over a dozen years or so of the Patriarca crime family. He passed away in December of 2024, actually passed away 1 year ago this month. And episode two is titled The Fugitive. It looks at Menacchio's remarkable 10 years on the run from a double gangland slaying case. He was charged with accessory to commit murder and murder conspiracy, as well as a bunch of other people. Actually, Patriarca, Senior Patriarca, went away to a federal prison in Atlanta for that murder. And there's been a lot of mystery around where Menacchio was when he was on the run. You know, there are rumors and whatnot, but you know, Chris, time has a funny way of allowing the truth to come out, and new FBI files really shed light on where he was and exactly what law enforcement knew and when they knew it when he was on the run for 10 years, and it completely changes the narrative of that whole era.
I don't want to give it away, Tim, but you found a lot of files in a very mysterious place and totally unconnected to Menacchio, at least we believe. Tell people where you found these documents.
Yeah, it was wild, Chris. So the Trump administration, and Trump won, if you will, he authorized the release of thousands, tens of thousands of pages of FBI files connected to the JFK assassination. And he did that again in 2025 with even more files. And scooped up in those in that release were organized crime related, FBI documents. A lot of that is, twofold. One, the FBI was investigating any possible connections between organized crime and the assassination of the president at the time in 1963. But there was also a connection with a guy named Pro Lerner. We don't have to get into it on your show, but he was a hitman for the Patriarca crime family that this has been reported before and written about in a book that the Kennedy administration flirted with using him to take out Fidel Castro. Just wild stuff, right?
Right.
That is our understanding of how these files got scooped up in those release, those two tranches of the release. And remarkably, most of them really weren't all that redacted, Chris, which is something I've been dealing with FBI files for almost 30 years.
Right.
And it's like assault and battery with a magic marker. Here, they were so hastily released that we just got all this crazy information on organized crime figures in the New England area, including Minocchio and his time on the run.
We're talking with Tim White. Tim, of course, today is the second episode. It dropped this morning. I watched it. Tell people how they can watch it and what to look forward in the third and fourth episode.
Yeah, so people can download the free 12-plus television app like you did, Chris. It's just like if you're down, you know, you're going to watch something on Netflix or Disney Plus or HBO Max. It's the same idea, except with us, you're not paying for it.
Right, it's free.
So you got a Roku stick, you got an Amazon Fire, Samsung TVs, an Apple TV device, you know, whatever you watch your streaming platforms on your TV. This is not on your iPad or your phone. This is on your TV. Just search WPRI. The 12 Plus app will be right there. You download it and it'll be, you just open it up and you can watch the first two episodes of The Last Dawn of Providence. To your question, two more episodes to go. Episode 3, which we are putting the finishing touches on right now, is about Minocchio's rise to power as a mob boss and really the violent, tumultuous time leading up to that, particularly under the leadership of a guy you and I have talked about a lot, Francis Cadillac Frank Salemi. And then episode 4 focuses in on the end of his life, but primarily the federal investigation that was his ultimate downfall. It was a massive organized crime case nationally in 2011 that ultimately took him out. So I did a lot of reporting on that at the time. So we get in depth in on all of that and then try to really wrap it up with what it all means to the New England crime family as a whole. That's episode 4. That will drop on December 15th. So every Monday, a new episode comes out.
Tim, I really appreciate you making time this morning because fabulous TV, particularly at 7 o'clock this morning. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm glad you woke up to, you started your day with The Last Dawn of Providence, Chris. It means a lot.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it. We'll get you back next Monday, probably.
I love it. Anytime. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Tim. That's Tim White from Channel 12. Again, guys, this is some really good reporting. You would expect that because Tim's done it for years, but really good reporting. It's worth your time. Doesn't cost you anything. And he's got stuff you've never heard about. People in that he interviews, guys who were on the criminal side with Minocchio, and talks about a lot of really interesting stuff. Plus, he's got good guys in there, too, like Brendan Daugherty, who's been here on the program promoting his book in the past. Really good. There's nothing on television quite like this, so make sure you download the app on your television and check it out. The Last Dawn of Providence about Louis Minocchio. All right. So kind of open phones now. Again, I was looking at campaign finance records over the weekend. And it occurred to me that for all the talk of people, you know, here on the program, John Mitchell's been there too long and all of that. And so-and-so's going to run and this guy's going to run and that guy's going to run. I see really no evidence of it. Nobody is out there really raising money. And to the point of the last caller before the hour, who said, why is it about money? Well, it's about money because that's what we can keep track of. I don't know what individuals are doing to network and all of that. But I do know, because it's public record, what they're doing to raise money. John Mitchell got close to $500,000, and everybody else basically is close to zero in the scheme of things. They're about zero, and he's at $500,000, with the exception of Tony Cabral, who regularly hovers around $250,000. Tony Cabral, the state representative from the South End, who tried to be the mayor in the past and lost to John Mitchell. So, I'm just telling you that I'm going to keep score and keep you updated on any potential candidate that emerges for mayor. Now, keep in mind, there are other people that have personal wealth who might be interested in the race, and people that have personal networks with a lot of wealth that might be interested in the race and wouldn't need to start as early as everybody else we know is thinking about running, right? In other words, I hesitate to say his name in this context because I know he's looking at the U.S. Senate race, but Scott Lang is regularly considered a possible run for mayor again because he retired undefeated from being mayor, right? He never faced a serious challenge, much like our current mayor has never faced a serious challenge. Maria Giesta was not a serious challenge. Neither was the guy from Springfield, Tyson Moultrie. He wasn't a serious challenge, despite the support of the Coalition for Social Justice. They were supporting him, but that was not, even then, a serious attempt. So Scott Lang got elected, never faced a serious challenge, and retired undefeated, right? So he's always considered a possible future candidate for mayor of New Bedford. And Scott, if he decided to run, would be able to raise the money in no time. In no time. I just don't happen to think Scott Lang is walking through that door anytime soon. I just don't. I think he would was a great mayor. I think he'd be another great mayor should he decide to run. But, you know, I just don't really know if that's in the cards. His law firm's very busy. He's very busy. And the other people who are out there who've said publicly to enough people that I consider them possible candidates. So let's use Ian Abreu. Ian Abreu is a possible candidate for mayor. Now remember, I don't think he'll run against John Mitchell. Shane Burgo is also running for mayor. He's declared it a number of times, although not on the radio or on television or on Facebook. But he's told enough people that he wants to run for mayor to include people whose opinion I trust tremendously. On the night of the election, he was saying, the mayor's race starts now, and I'm going to need maximum contributions from people. And he was saying that to people who are in the political realm. So Shane Burgo, whether he wants to count it or not, has declared, unless he's willing to say people are lying about him, which I'm sure he wouldn't say, Shane Burgo is now running for mayor today. But his fundraising is nowhere near there where it needs to be. Ian Abreu does all right. He's got about 40 grand in the bank. And that's nothing. I mean, that's one John Mitchell fundraiser. John Mitchell has $400,000 in the bank. So, 508-996-0500. Would you like to, remember guys, they're going to need about a year to get their campaign up to snuff. And if they're going to be serious, they need to get this year's money in the bank. Because next year starts a new calendar year. And next year, there's limits in place. There are this year too. But you understand, someone can only donate $1,000 to your campaign. So if they haven't done it, these guys who are thinking about running need to get that $1,000 for year 2025 in the bank. And then from that point, they can start in January raising about $30,000 a month. That's what they're going to have to do to get anywhere near the mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell. But 508-996-0500. It's kind of open phones this morning if something's on your mind. And again, I would like you to add to the people you pray for, who I hope is one of them is me, because certainly I need it, is Andrew Wolf. Andrew Wolf, that's the young National Guard soldier who was murdered by a terrorist in Washington, D.C., shot by a foreigner with a firearm. Most foreigners in a foreign country with a firearm are considered an invader, right? Some people embrace them here in this country. But Andrew Wolf was murdered by a terrorist in Washington, D.C. I hope you will pray for his soul and his recovery, right? Pray for Andrew Wolf's recovery as he sits in intensive care. Sarah Beckstrom is the soldier who died. Sarah Beckstrom is a National Guard soldier from West Virginia who died. Please pray for her soul. Andrew Wolf is struggling to recover. But as someone who's been there, it is possible, certainly possible, if we all pray in unison for Andrew Wolf to recover, right? To recover. And Sarah Beckstrom, she's gone right to Valhalla, in my opinion, right to Valhalla and on there to heaven, right? Sarah Beckstrom was murdered by a terrorist, a foreigner on American soil with a firearm. I think everybody in elected office today ought to be thinking about that and thinking about the ease by which foreigners can get firearms. Do you think the Second Amendment was intended for foreigners? Do you think that FDR thought it was okay if the Germans showed up and had firearms? Of course he didn't. Think Harry Truman thought it was okay for the Japanese to have firearms here on American soil? No, but for some reason, some Democrats today think it's okay. And it's probably Republicans who think it's okay for foreigners to have firearms on American soil. I do not. And I'm a strident defender of the Second Amendment. But I think it only applies to Americans. Americans are the only ones who deserve private firearms here on American soil. And I think every elected official ought to take a good look at what they control, what they legislate on, what their executive power is, and carry it forward to make sure we strip foreigners of firearms on American soil. I mean, a terrorist attack ought to woke everybody up. If it didn't wake you up, hopefully hearing me will. 508-996-05. How do you feel about that? Foreigners having firearms on American soil? To me, it's outrageous. It really is. And I'm all for you, an American citizen, having whatever firearms you really want to have, tell you the truth. But the fact of the matter is there are people within the sound of my voice, members of my audience, who are American citizens, who are no longer allowed to have firearms. Case-by-case basis. But the idea that any foreigner can obtain a firearm, in some cases legally, is outrageous to me. It really cuts against everything I believe about being an American and living here in safety. All right, tell you what, we're going to take a break. If it's on your mind, I want to hear about it. 508-996-0500. Stick around, we'll be right back.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health, Advanced Medicine, More Care.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Rodeo. I'll put a big Texas smile on your face. I said, girls, I ain't as good as I once was. I got a few years on me now. But there was a time back in my prime when I could really lay it down.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McGuire. This is a little Toby Keith for you, right? Okay, guys. I want to play a little bit from my journalist friends at the New Bedford Light. They do a miraculous job, I think. Do a real good job bringing us the news. Now, I don't always agree with their editorial perspective. Well, that's all right, right? You can put out a good product even if I don't agree with it. Or I can appreciate a good product even if I don't always agree with it. And I'm yet to catch them, really, in a factual era. So I think they do a marvelous job over there. And so I want to play a little clip from the New Bedford Light about an immigration bill. It's making its way through the State House. There is a big rally. You have a job, so you're not able to be there, right? You're working, paying the taxes to pay the legislative salaries of people who, quite frankly, are voting against your interests, all right? Quite frankly, you're paying the salaries of people who intend to vote against your interests, unless you're an illegal alien, of which I assume most of you are not. And if you are, please deport yourself. Please get the hell out of my audience. Go home. Go home. You don't have to stay here, but you do have to go home, right? If you are an illegal alien, please deport yourself, right? Please take the pretty lady seriously, Christy Noem, and go home, right? When a pretty lady tells you it's time to go home, it's time to go home, right? And please, I know that. I know that intimately, right? So when the pretty lady says go home, it's time to go. I'll try to work, get that said in Kichi for you if you don't understand English. So anyway, there is a bill making its way with a sponsorship of Antonio Cabral. AFDC is how he calls him. So we're going to now hear from the robot at the New Bedford Light explaining the role of the guy you keep sending to the State House, Antonio Cabral, state representative. It's funny, I was talking with a number of first generation and immigrants from the Azores about Mr. AFDC himself over Thanksgiving. They are not happy with him. They really are not happy with him. So I think he's prime for the pushing, to be honest with you. But here is the robot from the New Bedford Light. Not going to play the whole thing. So I want you to go to newbedfordlight.org to absorb this great journalism. I'm going to play you a clip of it, spoken by the robot. Stick around.
Advocates testify on Beacon Hill in support of bills that protect immigrants. By Kevin G. Andrade. Boston, hundreds of advocates from across the state gathered at the State House Tuesday to testify in support of a series of bills that would better protect immigrants and strengthen immigration laws. The advocates gathered under the banner of a new group, Protect Our Massachusetts, to testify at the Senate Judiciary Committee and Joint Committee on Public Safety and Homeland Security.
By the way, I just want to put in my own editorial comment here. Remember, at the New Bedford Light, when they say immigrant, it's kind of a catch-all phrase. They're including illegal immigrants, regular immigrants, undocumented people, whatever the hell that means, because they can get driver's license, which is a document now. But my point is, when you hear immigrant, you've got to recognize that the New Bedford Light uses as a catch-all phrase, which encompasses illegal immigrants as well. So it's, you got to know that to appreciate the article fully, right? To fully appreciate the article. In fact, you may want to just substitute in the word illegal immigrant or the words illegal immigrant as you hear this article put on by the New Bedford Light, Kevin Andrade. Andrade, I think is the name, but the robot says it's Andrade. Here we go, back to New Bedford Light.
The group is spearheaded by the Massachusetts Immigrant and Refugee Advocacy Coalition, MIRA, Brazilian Worker Center, American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts, Massachusetts Teachers Association, the Jewish Alliance for Law and Social Action, and several chapters of the Service Employees International Union. We stand here today because it is our shared responsibility not only for the sake of immigrant families' humanity, said Gilberto Calderon, MIRA Director of Advocacy, at a news conference before the hearings began, but for the safety and survival of every one of us to ensure that the laws in Massachusetts protect all of us. The advocates pointed to the mass deportation campaign, launched shortly after President Donald Trump entered the White House on January 20th, as the motivation for the move. We are living in unprecedented times, said Laura Rotolo, Senior Advocacy Director for Field Initiatives at the Massachusetts ACLU. The levels of violence and destruction in our community are unprecedented. There is no one thing that one person can do that's going to stop the mass deportation plan, but it must begin here, she continued. There is much that our state can do. Among the advocates speaking was Marcelo Gomez de Silva, a Milford teen detained by ICE on his way to volleyball practice in May.
An illegal alien.
His detention prompted a tour of the ICE Boston field office in Burlington by Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton and Jake Auchincloss. His was among the many stories that brought to light the poor conditions of detainees held at the facility well beyond the 48 hours it was meant to. People shouldn't be scared every day of being taken by ICE for no reason
at all,
he said.
An illegal alien.
One thing that is true is that immigrants alone will not be able to fight against the government.
We hope not.
Thousands of immigrants in Massachusetts have been detained since then, and more than 60 of those have been from the New Bedford area.
Do you hear that word? That's an illegal alien saying we won't be able to fight, the immigrants won't be able to fight the government alone. That's an invader to the country saying that. He's going to fight our government, the one that many of you and myself included elected to do mass deportations. See why I'm very concerned about foreigners with firearms? We have other foreigners, illegal aliens, saying they're going to fight the government, and they're getting the support of many of our elected representatives. Dare I say, all the Democrats elected in this region are standing up with that illegal alien to fight our elected government. The hell is going on around here? All right, I'm going to take a break. We come back. I want to take your calls on this. Do you think it's right? You're going to hear about some of your state reps in this article. You should go to New Bedford Light, read the whole thing. We'll let the robot play it for you. NewBedfordLight.org. Stick around. We'll be right back. Talking about the radicals that really control the state house now in Massachusetts. The radical Democrats, they don't seem like it when you vote for them, but they really are radicals. Major, major radicals. To include much of our delegation, all right? Now, I want to be clear, Senator Mark Montigny, he broke, hopefully not temporarily, but from the radicals when he voted against funding the Healy Hotels, right? The Healy Hotels. Those are the migrant shelters where they were storing the illegal aliens flown in by the Biden administration, literally right into the airports and were housed at the airports. And then they were transferred to the Healy Hotels where they were put up at our expense, billions of dollars. Well, our radicals are not done fighting the Trump administration. Hardly, hardly. And fortunately, the New Bedford Light, you can read all about it, newbedfordlight.org, brought us the story. It's available from Kevin Andrade. Amazing that when you read that article, or you'll have the robot play it for you, Tony Cabral's all over that article. all over that article. He's going to use as much of our money as he can possibly get his hands on to help the illegal aliens, which the New Bedford Light puts under the label of immigrant. That's an important distinction to know, that when you read the New Bedford Light, they use immigrant as a capture-all phrase, as opposed to pointing out some immigrants are here illegally. Most of them are here illegally, but there are a lot of them that broke into the country. And there are others that came into some programs that don't exist anymore because we voted it out. And you have illegal aliens using the violent language at our state house. Keep that in mind as we bury National Guardsmen killed by foreigners with firearms on American territory. Take a break. We'll be right back.